This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
Hey, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the WOW, the Woody Overton Window. This is Mike Agovino with Woody Overton for episode number 33, Friday, October 4th. Woody has a spectacular hat on this morning. Look at that thing. Oh,
in respect of Hunt, I always tell Cindy every year two things. We interrupt this marriage to bring you football and Hunt season. Hunt season started on Tuesday. So.
I like that. We interrupt this marriage thing. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's accepted when it's worded so officially, right? You have to accept it.
Right. I've been doing that 16 years now, so she knows. But anyway, we're going up this weekend. I have to tell you about Mississippi Jumbo Peanuts. That you can get peanuts from like Virginia and Florida and whatever, but the place in Mississippi, the farms, they have the biggest fucking peanuts in the world, and we boil them, and I get like six sacks.
I've been married to a woman from Mississippi for 25 years, and I've never heard of Mississippi jumbo peanut. What part of Mississippi do they get them from?
South of Jackson, about, there's like four different farms that do it, and it's, you're going up, what's that exit? It's about 40 miles from Jackson, but now they have satellite branches that do it. You can get them in Brookhaven, different places like that. But it's an exit up on the right in between Brookhaven and I can't think of the name of it right now in Jackson. But yeah, we get them about a sack, 35-pound sacks. And look, they're bigger than your thumb.
Can't believe I've never heard. You know that my wife's family, her mother, grew up in Brookhaven.
Really?
And yeah, and her uncle, who played in the NFL for years, actually in the Hall of Fame, is the most famous person ever from Brookhaven. They're like, yeah, you know, celebrities there. Lance Allworth is his name.
I've heard that name before, yeah. But yep, that's it. And yeah, boiled peanuts is a southern thing for sure, but I'll do like some Cajun ones. I'll do regular salted ones. I'll do some garlic ones and whatever. But they freeze so good. You put them in the freezer, and it's like crawfish when you pour the ice on them, so they suck up the season. It's the same thing on those. You pull them out, and they're just as good as the day you boil them.
Wow.
Great.
Now, I've had the Georgia boiled peanuts.
It's still a peanut, right? But they're not as big as these are.
And are they only like twice the size of a normal peanut?
They're huge. Oh, way bit bigger than that. Probably like four times the size.
Come on.
They're gigantic. But they only produce for like not even 2 months a year. It's like middle of August to beginning of October. This would be like the last week.
Yeah. I'm going to have to find out about these boiled peanuts. My in-laws... it's funny, you marry somebody from a different part of the country and you end up adopting, you know, some of the things that are the traditions and the foods that they love and kind of swap across the families. So my in-laws have fallen in love with these Italian pretzels. They're called tarals or tarales that my mother and her sisters used to make when I was a kid. But now we get them from this one factory that's like hidden in this little town on Long Island that no one even knows it's there. The guy's got like 20 illegals in this, in this room with, it's a major sweatshop, but you can buy them, you know, in 5 pound, bags and then ship them. So I just shipped some to my in-laws, and you would have thought, you know, it was the greatest gift I ever sent them, sending Italian pretzels to Mississippi. But now that I know they've never sent me Mississippi peanuts, I'm very...
You ask them about Mississippi jumbo.
Yeah, well, I'm going to need a trade deal on Mississippi jumbo.
We should be some.
Well, you know, last time we were together and recording, which was last Thursday, we knew the hurricane was going to hit. We knew it was going to be a pretty significant hurricane. But the last thing you're thinking is that the real trouble with this hurricane is going to be, you know, hundreds of miles inland, because right. it's going to stall in a mountainous region and drop 3 feet of water
yeah.
on everybody that lives there. It's just, how do you plan for that?
You don't, man. And it's horrible, and our hearts go out to them, because we've been there when, not only with the 1,000-year flood, but with all the hurricanes, and some of them, yeah, that you don't think are going to do anything, just absolutely total destruction. Like, I saw that in just prayers for those people. I know exactly what they're going through, and it's just horrible, and all the people that died, right? I think it's like
some of the videos just brutal. Were you down at all in New Orleans in the aftermath of Katrina?
Yes. We were the first SWAT team with our boots on the ground before Louisiana State Police had theirs there. But we got called back because rumors were running rampant in Livingston Parish that all this raping and robbing was going on. So the sheriff called us back, and it wasn't true. There were rumors about everything back then. But my buddy Matt Potan was with NOPD at the time, like on the roof of the precinct when they were shooting at him at nighttime and all that shit. And it was bad. Yeah.
And this is the worst hurricane tragedy since then. And ironically, neither of them were really about the hurricane itself. They're about a lack of preparedness or, failing levees in one case. And in this one, I don't know. I just don't know what people in that part of the country would have been thinking. Was there any sort of, hey, be prepared, this thing looks like it's on a track to come over us, it could slow down, it could drop. I don't know. I think it was life as usual, right?
I think so. And they're not used to it, right? And they're certainly not used to having all that water dumped on them at one time, being without power and all that. Look, it sucks. There's nothing good about a hurricane. And these many people dying this far, probably this is the only time people have died this far inland, I would think.
It's gotta be, and it's a uniquely beautiful part of the country. I had a client who lived in Greensboro, Winston-Salem, but had a second place in what is called Grandfather Mountain, which is, somewhere up in that area, not that close to Asheville, but along that range. And it's just gorgeous up there. And Asheville is infamous for how beautiful everything is up there. And it's all gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we're so spoiled when it comes to electricity and cell phones and everything else. And when you don't have it, water, fresh drinking water and everything else, when you don't have it, you're fucked. And then you realize, how bad it is.
Yeah, I was looking at some alerts from the county that was hardest hit up there, and they're marketing out to people places where they can actually go and use a toilet.
I know. Yeah. The went 19 days without power after Hurricane Ida, and I took a shower with a garden hose in somebody's yard. In a town where we're feeding people, and it's just, using a toilet outside is a very real thing. That's just one of the things. Right?
Well,
and then you got kids, you got small kids, you got to take care of and shit. Fuck, can you imagine that?
And you can't get out, right?
You can't get out. Yeah.
So I think the last I saw, and I didn't see any update this morning, but I'm sure there's one out, was 161.
That's crazy.
Total deaths, which, that's a staggering number for one of the, again, worse since Katrina, which I don't remember what the number was, but that's a huge number.
Over 3,000 something for Katrina, with all between the Mississippi Gulf Coast and Louisiana. Yeah.
What number did you say?
Over 3,000.
3,000?
Like 3,300 total.
That's 9/11.
I know. And it said, I mean, when the levees broke, all those people drowned. Yeah. So.
Well, some of those videos, did you see the video of the casket going down the river?
I've seen one before. I didn't see if on this storm, but I've seen in storms and floods where the caskets were floating by, popped out of the ground. Well, you know, in New Orleans, that's why they bury them above ground. And the thing is because the water table's too high.
Yep. That one, and obviously the seeing that roof scene right before those people are, I mean, just that's awful.
Horrible. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I was going to read a story about it, but you know what? I think this is so everywhere and everybody's seeing it. And you and I just hit on a bunch of the major things there. Hopefully things are getting a little bit more closer to normal right now. And they're starting to get some of these services back. Although, I mean, power's, you know,
I know what it's like to sit in, not only the FEMA line, but the National Guard lines every day to get a bag of ice and a box of MREs and what have you. And just, yeah, we got a lot of lifers up there and we love y'all. And, you know, prayers are huge prayers, man, huge prayers. And it's like, again, like a migraine or being a surviving member of a homicide victim's family. Everybody knows what that is, but until you go through it, you don't know.
Right. And for the rest of your life, like being a New Yorker that had a lot of friends and family that firefighters, cops, some friends that worked in the Twin Towers, you're forever connected to it because of where you grew up and how many people were there. Same thing here. It's, I mean, for generations, there are going to be families telling stories about this past week there.
And the last thing on that real quick, you never believe how great people are until you go through an event like that. People will come from all over. I remember it was during the 2016 flood and, you know, we're ripping everything out of our house, whatever. And some lady came down. She'd come from South Carolina or somewhere. She just bought a bunch of shit. Like socks and underwear and stuff. And she was driving down the street saying, do y'all need any socks or underwear or toothpaste? And she had just driven from out of state, you know, her own wheel to do that. But people are amazing at times like this. It's just sad they have to go through it.
For sure. For sure. Well, I know you've got a story about a crazy man in Arizona.
I do. And so a man in Arizona went to great lengths to try and get a glimpse of his victims. Now, this guy's name is Jesse Michael Johnson. He was arrested after crawling under several women's cars for his sexual gratification in Gilbert, Arizona. Can you imagine how hot it was for him to crawl under his cars to do this? Johnson, 28, caught via camera surveillance camera at a supercar wash in Gilbert on Thursday, August 29th. He was arrested on Tuesday, September 24th, and charged with 3 counts of voyeurism and 3 counts of disorderly conduct. And he's expected to be in court on October 3rd. But one of the alleged victims, who asked to be identified as Chanel, had stopped at the car wash before taking her son to school. While there, Johnson peeked his head out from the driver's side of Chanel's car, and this is on the surveillance footage. He then returned to his car and pretended to be cleaning his tires. She told the AZ family that she likely would not have realized what was happening if another customer had not pointed him out. Johnson was seen doing this 2 more times the same day to 2 different women. In these 3 incidents, he pulled into a parking lot spot next to the victims, according to investigators. While each victim was vacuuming her vehicle, the defendant hid under her SUV and spent several minutes under her vehicle. The defendant climbed out from under the vehicle when each victim was finished vacuuming and left the area. That is not okay. This is a place, you know, to wash your car. You should feel safe. Superstar car wash general manager Breeze Brito told the AZ family. Chanel added that she felt very violated and has been having nightmares. Going into the community and doing this to women is absolutely disgusting. And I don't think he realizes what it's doing to us victims. I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe that I was in that situation. I just had a baby two weeks prior to this. I have two other kids. It was a very scary situation, especially with my little boy with me when it happened. I guess this is just a really good reminder just to make sure that you're always looking around, keeping your kids close, because you never know what can be happening around you. Now, authorities in Arizona found Johnson had a criminal history and was arrested multiple times in Nebraska. Johnson told law enforcement in the Midwest that he is sexually attracted to women's feet and could not control his sexual desires. Well, in June of 2016, he was cited four different times in Nebraska for allegedly hiding under cars and grabbing people's ankles. I wish a motherfucker would grab my ankles while I was walking to a car. He was arrested for disturbing the peace and pleaded no contest. He's sentenced to 2 years probation in order to have a psychological evaluation. They need to cut his nuts off.
So the whole time you're going through this story, I'm trying to understand how he's getting an angle. I'm thinking he's trying to look up women's skirts and he's hiding under the car and trying to slide to an angle. It never occurred to me that this same bastard was doing it to look at people's feet and ankles.
He wanted to look at their ankles, right? Crazy. And I had a case before where a guy was going around and he would go up to women and say, oh, you have nice, if they weren't sandals and shit, you have nice toes, you have nice whatever. And then we got enough complaints when finally took care of his ass. I mean, it's not a whole lot to deal with that.
Of all the body parts.
Yeah, I don't get it. I mean, I don't know. For some people, it's a real deal, though, I guess.
I'm speechless. I just don't have any understanding of how that part of a woman's anatomy could be attracted to like that.
I guess he would scout them out to make sure they didn't have like tube socks and sneakers on or boots or something, right?
But, well, you know, if they're going to the car wash, that it's going to be, you know, the ground's going to be wet. They're going to maybe use, so they're unlikely to have the tube socks. So it's for you people who love ankles, I guess that would be a prime spot.
Hey, y'all, changing my wardrobe from summer to fall. Hey, it's never easy. Luckily, Quince offers timeless and high-quality items I adore, ensuring my wardrobe stays fresh and I don't blow my budget. And there's nothing easier than going to Quince and choosing these high-quality items, like cashmere sweaters from $50, pants for every occasion, washable silk tops, and so much more. The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, and I love that. Look, I got the stainless steel Link Apple Watch band for $59.90, and it's heavy duty, it's awesome, and it's like $100 less than I could find anywhere else. And I also got 100% organic cotton fisherman quarter zip up sweater. The color is alabaster. Man, I can't wait to wear that dude out this fall. And Cindy got the Mongolian cashmere boat neck sweater and heather gray. And I'm telling you, these are classic pieces at a fraction of the price. Make switching seasons a breeze with Quince's high quality closet essentials. Go to quince.com/RLRC for free shipping on your order and 365 day returns. That's quince.com/RLRC to get free shipping and 365 day returns. quince.com/RLRC. You'll thank me later. Hey, y'all, let me tell you about Mochi. Mochi is a telehealth platform that connects patients seeking medication-based weight loss treatment with board-certified doctors and dietitians to help them determine the best treatment options to accomplish that goal. Mochi's program is completely virtual, meaning you can access their services anywhere in the United States and you will be meeting with their team online. You deserve doctors that listen. Mochi is dedicated to providing holistic, patient-centered care that prioritizes overall well-being with the goal of transforming how weight management is approached. Mochi Health takes a holistic approach to weight loss that includes visit with board-certified doctors, nutrition consultations, and medications delivered to your door. Science-backed medications including GLP-1s like Ozempic and generic compound versions, affordable and accessible, regardless of insurance coverage. With Mochi, their dietitians work hand-in-hand with your medication to create personalized nutrition plans that fit your lifestyle. Reach your weight loss goals with science-backed, FDA-approved GLP-1 medications and support from real doctors and guidance from registered dietitians and help with making easy and sustainable changes to achieve results. Y'all have seen this. My wife has done it. My brother-in-law has done it. One of my best friends is doing it, and it really is an amazing process that works. So get started at joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off. That's joinmochi.com and use code RLRC to receive $40 off and let Mochi help change your life.
So we had two very significant deaths of famous athletes this week. I know you're going to talk about one of them, but Pete Rose was such a just big part of growing up for me because I despised him so much as a huge baseball fan. Grew up with the New York Mets, was born the same year as the Mets, lived through the best of times with the Mets, the worst of times with the Mets, and the miracle in 69 when I was 7 years old, and then this incredible series in 1973 when I was 11 years old with the Mets against the Cincinnati Reds. And the Mets had a shortstop who was not a good player by any sort of major league standards where you'd look at his stats and his stats would do anything to impress you. But he was with the Mets for a bunch of years. His name is Bud Harrelson. And, you know, he'd been a fixture at shortstop for the Mets forever. And he was a skinny little guy. Well, anyway, he and Pete Rose get in a fight in, I don't know what game it was of the World Series, of the Championship Series. And this is the way Rose played. He slid really hard into second base, and then the fight broke out. But the Rose is one of those guys that, unless he was on your team, I mean, if he was on your team, you freaking loved him. And there was, you couldn't believe how the guy played, how he hustled. His nickname was Charlie Hustle because he would run to first base if he got a walk. He would sprint from home plate down to first base after he got a walk. He did everything hard. He was the first guy that did those head first slides, and he would do a head first slide. And now these guys are wearing, mittens, and they've got all of this equipment to absorb the blow, and they got much softer dirt that they're this guy would take off like Superman off of the Daily Planet building and just, tear up his wrists and his elbows and it, seemingly he would leave the ground from like 20 feet away from the bag and slide all the way into it. But that guy earned his nickname for sure. And longevity was a huge part of things for him because he was a guy who played every day, batted leadoff, had 200 hits like every year for a bunch of years. And if you look at his all-time record, so he is the all-time hit leader in Major League Baseball. Nobody has had more hits than Pete Rose. Right. And it's over 4,000. The guy played in 3,562 games. He had almost 16,000 at-bats as a Major League player. I mean, those kind of things are unheard of. He was an All-Star 17 times.
It's crazy.
17 times. And he won three World Series, and the year I was talking about, he was 73. He was the National League MVP, which was even more reason as a Mets fan to despise him. But the thing he's become most known for after his playing career is the fact that he was not allowed into the Baseball Hall of Fame. And I don't know how many times, but a bunch of times they have voted on whether to let him in. And the reason they don't let him in is because he gambled as a manager. He was managing the Cincinnati Reds, and he bet as the manager of the Reds. He bet on games the Reds played in, but he always bet on the Reds to win. He wasn't shaving runs or, you know, doing something to affect a bet in some kind of a scam. It was, this guy was so ultra competitive and such a homer for his team that he believed he was going to win every game. So he went and bet, and then he lied about it. And that was probably the biggest.
That's where they got him at. I watched the documentary with him recently. It was very interesting. Have you seen it?
No.
It's on Netflix. It's like him in his older years. They finally asked him about the bet, and then he's going to still signing all these, to all these autograph signings with John, with Bench and all of them, his former teammates. And they asked, like, Bob Costas, do you believe Pete Rose should be whatever, or do you believe what he's saying? He was like, I can believe about half of what he says, but in a good way. Even his own teammates, everybody that came out and supported him, Reggie Jackson came out and said, just put the dude in the Hall of Fame, right? So Pete Rose is outside the Hall of Fame when they're inducting new people every time, and he's signing autographs. So he, like, you got to pay him, to sign it. But he still was a big gambler. But then he quit. I think the last year of his life, he quit gambling on anything. I don't know if he knew the end was coming or whatever. At least that's what they said on the documentary. You need to watch it. It's really good.
I will definitely watch it. But, you look at how pervasive gambling now is on sports, and how it's a huge part of sports coverage. I mean, ESPN, every single thing they do just about is sponsored by, some bet sports kind of play. And so it's like how, taking Reggie Bush's Heisman Trophy away because maybe some guy advanced the money for his parents to have a, not maybe he did for his parents to have a house, blah, blah, blah. And here we are now where, if Arch Manning could stay in college for 6 years, we'll make more money than somebody would make in the NFL as a quarterback for 20 years. Right.
So the other one, have you watched the NIL thing? It's all about LSU. It's a documentary, and they did it on LSU because LSU is the number one college for NIL promotion. They have, like, people.
Thank you, Livy.
That are seriously, they have people that work full time at LSU just to promote their athletes, get them deals, contracts and deals. Fantastic series. It starts with Jaden Daniels, Livy, that girl that does all the stuff on her face that does the hurdles, a no-name guy on the basketball team, a white guy. He's making like $800,000 a year. And it's just, so you need to watch that too. But I think that's on Prime also. But
I got to find that. By the way, how painful is it for you to watch knowing Jaden Daniels is going to be one of the biggest studs in the NFL? He is tearing it fucking up, and we're going to have to face him in the division. First of all, I still can't get over the fact that you're a freaking Cowboys fan, but you have to look at this guy you cheered for like crazy for years and now see him across the way tearing up your defense.
Hey, I cut a lot of shit for saying I'm a Cowboys fan, but I'm a Saints fan too, but I just grew up. Hell, when I was a kid, you couldn't get the Saints game. We had 2.5 channels, and the Saints game was always blacked out because they never sold out the stadium. So they blocked it out in the local market. It's probably why I wasn't a big fan of them. But I got a buddy of mine that plays used to be one of the top defensive backs. I can't tell you why, but anyway. Jaden Daniels is a stud. I took him on my best ball teams where you keep the same players through the whole year and the computer picks which one has the best thing. And I took it just because I knew he was going to be good. He was either going to be a super stud or he was going to be a Rohan Davey on a total flop. But
you can tell if you watch the preseason Hard Knocks that the Giants were in, how bad the Giants were hoping he'd still be there when they got to the board. I mean, they're obviously really happy with Leak, but how badly they wanted Daniels, and to watch him go to Washington of all teams. But
yeah, watch that NIL special, and it's about him since it started, and his mama got him his first deals, and his mama's like his almost like his agent and stuff, and you just knew this kid had something special. I'd never knew it was like that, and then I watched that, I was like, ooh, I'm so glad I picked him because he's gonna be good. And they didn't start out real good, but I mean, they won, but now he's really coming into his own. It's just a winner. The kid's a winner.
And it sucks so bad to have a shitty quarterback. I mean, yeah. I look at, we got to go against Prescott. We got to go against Hurts. We got to go against Daniels now. And I've got Daniel Jones. We're paying 50 something million dollars a year to, who underthrew three wide open touchdowns that, okay, maybe you or I couldn't throw them, but the average NFL quarterback makes all three of those passes and scores those touchdowns.
And he's got Malik Nabers, who is Jaden Daniels' number one deep threat.
And he's unbelievable. I mean, Leak is unbelievable. Yeah. But but not if the quarterback can't get him the ball. Can't get him the ball downfield anyway.
Yeah. Yes, indeed. Rest in peace, Pete Riders. And I'm going to tell you about another one. This week, we had not one, but two tragic deaths of sport heroes. And in the case of Pete Rose, he at least lived to be 82, right? And that's a full life. That's what my dad's age. But Mutombo was one of the best defensive players in NBA history and a longtime global ambassador for the game. And he died Monday from brain cancer. He's just 58 years old. So just younger than you and just older than me, Mike. His family revealed 2 years ago that he was undergoing treatment for a brain tumor. And the NBA said he died surrounded by his family. Dikembe Mutombo was simply larger than life, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said. On the court, he was one of the greatest shot blockers and defensive players in the history of the NBA. And off the floor, he poured his heart and soul into helping others. And Mutombo was distinct in so many ways. He would do that playful little finger wag at opponents after blocking their shots. His height, his deep and gravelly voice, and his massive smile. And players of this generation were always drawn to him and Philadelphia 76ers star Joel Embiid, who was born in Cameroon. And they looked to Mutombo as an inspiration. It's a sad day, especially for us Africans and really the whole world, Embiid said Monday. Other than what he's accomplished on the basketball court, I think he was even better off the court. He's one of the guys that I look up to as far as having an impact, not just on the court, but off the court. He's done a lot of great things. He did a lot of great things for a lot of people. He was a role model of mine, and it is a sad day. And Mutombo spent 18 seasons in the NBA playing for Denver, Atlanta, Houston, Philadelphia, New York, and then the New Jersey Nets. The 7'2" center out of Georgetown was an 8-time All-Star, 3-time All-NBA selection, and went into the Hall of Fame in 2015 after averaging 9.8 points and 10.3 rebounds per game for his career. And he last played during the 2008-2009 season, devoting his time after retirement to charitable and humanitarian causes. And he spoke, this is crazy, he spoke 9 languages and founded the Dikembe Mutombo Foundation in 1997, concentrated on improving health, education, and quality of life for the people in the Congo. Ryan Mutombo, the Hall of Famer's son, said in a tribute post on social media that his father loved others with every ounce of his being. My dad is a hero because he simply cared. He remains the purest heart I've ever known. Now, Mutombo served on the boards of many organizations, including the Special Olympics International, the CDC Foundation, and the National Board for the U.S. Fund for UNICEF. There was nobody more qualified than Dikembe to serve as the NBA's first global ambassador, Silver said. He was a humanitarian at his core. He loved what the game of basketball could do to make a positive impact on communities, especially in his native Democratic Republic of the Congo and across the continent of Africa. Sound like a super dude, right?
Amazing guy. I mean, you think of, you know, all the privilege you see with all these prima donnas making a fortune in some of these sports leagues today. This guy would leave at the end of the NBA season every year, and he would go back to the Congo, and he would devote himself to improving life there, and did it every year.
That's awesome.
The stuff that these people are saying, not a bit of it is hyperbole. That's who this guy was. And John Ziegler, who I do the Journalism podcast with, and who I did with the Benefit of Hindsight podcast that we talk about on Mondays, with, went to Georgetown, was there the same time as Dikembe, and Zig was a golfer. He was the captain of the golf team at Georgetown. And, you know, while the golfers and basketball players aren't necessarily on the same, you know, if you're a scholarship athlete at a school at the same time, you kind of, things will happen. You'll be at similar events. You'll get to know each other a little bit. And he said that Mutombo was such a project. I mean, he was recruited into Georgetown from Congo with literally no basketball experience. It was just his raw size, athleticism, and aggressiveness that they saw, that they thought, well, we're going to be able to teach him the game. And so Zig would referee these games that would go on where folks that were, I don't know, red shirts or trying to make the team as walk-ons or were projects like Mutombo would play in. And he said the very first time he refereed a game with Mutombo, he knew what Mutombo was going to be and how great he was going to be. And he told the story that we tell on the episode we released this morning, but of Mutombo walking into a party, that Ziegler was at the party, and Mutombo walks in. And in that, he had this unbelievably deep voice. He announces to the party, "Who wants to sex with Mutombo?" Who wants to sex with Mutombo? Nice. And according to Ziegler, he was gifted in more ways than just on the basketball court. But this is a tremendous human being who made tremendous contributions to his native country. Never forgot where he came from, and. It was only 58 years, but he lived them. He lived them the right way. So,
yeah.
Goodbye, Dikembe.
Yeah. Rest in peace.
Well, I don't think we've ever really talked about a strike. Going back, thinking of all the Daily Shows and all the Wow shows, but man, yeah. This what's going on here is really incredible with the longshoremen. So. Longshoremen across the U.S. went on strike on Tuesday. It's the first time the union has had a work stoppage in half a century. The workers were recently offered a 50% pay raise over a six-year period, and the union turned it down. Word is they're looking for a 77% increase over that period, along with protections against tech innovation that would threaten job security. Dock workers at dozens of ports stretching along the East and the Gulf Coast walked the picket line after midnight on Tuesday as they launched a massive strike that threatens to reignite inflation and spark product shortages at the start of the holiday season. The work stoppage went into effect at 12:01 on Tuesday after the International Longshoremen's Association, the ILA, which represents 45,000 dock workers, and the alliance representing ports failed to renew a collective bargaining agreement that had just expired. For the first time since 1977, 36 ports stretching from strategic seaboard locations as far north as Maine and as far south as Texas, all of which handle an aggregate $3 trillion in the country's annual international trade, will be idle due to this work stoppage. The labor dispute, in which longshoremen are demanding higher wages and protections against automation of their jobs, puts a pause on billions of dollars worth of daily trade and threatens to cause significant damage to an economy that has been beset by stubbornly persistent inflation. It also comes at a critical time when authorities are in need of supplies and goods to deliver in hopes of helping parts of the Southeast recover from the devastating effects of Hurricane Helene. Ports throughout the Southeast and the Gulf lost power while congestion piled up as a result of the massive storm. Retailers like Walmart, IKEA, Samsung, Bob's Discount Furniture, LG, and Home Depot that rely on the imported goods have the most exposure to the damages that would ensure if the strike were to be prolonged. Workers began picketing at the Port of Philadelphia shortly after midnight, walking in a circle at a rail crossing outside of the port and chanting, quote, "No work without a fair contract." The United States Marine, the United States Maritime Alliance, the USMX, is the umbrella group that represents the managers of the ports, and they sought to avert a strike at the very last minute on Monday night, offering this 50% wage hike over 6 years. I don't know where in this country or any other people are saying 50% wage increases over a six-year period and walking away from. But the union appears to have dug in on its demands. In a recent video, the ILA president, Harold Daggett, this guy's a piece of work. The union president made almost $800,000 last year. He's driving around in a Bentley and representing these people. He told the rank and file members who voted unanimously to authorize a strike, quote, "We'll crush them." And so, you know, they have a lot of leverage right now, because first of all, you're a month away from an election, and the economy is obviously a huge topic, a huge part of the decision making going into this election. And so having the economy spiral in the wrong direction right now because of this is certainly not going to help the incumbent administration. But they have an opportunity. I forget what the law is called, but the president can force a union to work through this kind of a period. I think it's the Taft-Hartley Act is what it's called. Right. But Biden chose not to.
Yeah, well, he also said, whatever, I'm going to leave that alone. What I saw this morning. But you know, my son works in logistics for Caterpillar, and he called Sin and said, "Ooh, we're going to be screwed." And then everybody's going to be screwed. And I was like, no way. The president's going to make them under that Taft Act. I think he can do it for like 85 days or something, force them back to the table, or 58. I forget how many days it is. I said, there's no way they're going to let this happen, right? Not at Christmas time and everything else. I mean, you think back to COVID, when the all the ships were stocked offshore, and it wouldn't be as bad as this. The people would get pissed. Yeah, let them go to Walmart and not be able to find whatever, right? And you know, they don't think about it, but it'll fuck everything.
Oh yeah. I mean, when we first moved to New Orleans, and we bought the house in August of 21, 20 something days later, Ida hit, and the supply chain issues screwed us up. So first of all, we lost everybody who was working on the house, all the contract, they're gone. Right. And they were gone for 3 weeks. You can't finish a kitchen without the appliances. You have to have the appliances to do anything with anything else. And we couldn't get any kind of clear date on when the appliances were going to be delivered. We had to cancel everything that we had bought, and we had to go find used stuff in the country so that we could get it, so that we could have a freaking kitchen. I mean, it was crazy.
Look at all the 18 wheelers you see on the interstate, about 90% of those are carrying ports. Yeah. Now, I'm not really worried about this because I have a secret card to play on this full strike thing. Temu. China's going to make them go to work. Otherwise, Temu can't get all their shit in.
Depending on China. Well, the thing that amazes me the most about this is, you know, there's an old saying, you can't stand in the way of progress. There's really no way for industry to prevent
machine
technology from coming in and improving processes and innovation in that industry. These guys already have certain protections baked into that collective bargaining agreement that prevent the ports from using certain robotics. And so if they get a long-term deal that ensures that these ports are not going to be able to innovate while ports all over the world are innovating over that same period of time, it's going to dramatically impair competitiveness in the US and ultimately, you know, do a lot more damage than it does good. And it just, I don't know. It seems like, and I'm sure there are a lot of points on their side, but when I've seen the numbers, the salaries look pretty strong in this industry. Yeah. It looks like the union's gotten them a pretty good contract. It looks like timing is on their side here with the old agreement winding down, you know, 30 days before an election. And this guy is, you know, just looking to take advantage of that leverage that exists to get a deal for everyone that, you know, I think you win, I lose deals seldom work out for either side. I mean, it's the deals that happen at the 50-yard line where, you know, it's a compromise. You're giving up some things and you're getting something. This one seems like, well, no, the timing's on our side, so we're going to extract every advantage we possibly can. But, you know, one that ties the country's ports up into not being able to innovate for a period of time, that sure seems to be counter to the interests of the country at large.
I mean, the whole world's progressing and machines do what they do. And I get it. Some people are going to, you know, be out of a job, but if you can do something at a quarter of the cost and never get sick and everything else. And I hate that. I got a lot of good union friends. I used to work in a plant. It was so funny that they're so protected. And if it clouded up, they go out and draw a circle in the dirt. And if I get like three raindrops inside the circle, they were done for the day. Okay. But the flip side of that is, like up north in Salt Lake City, when they couldn't get welders and shit like that, they don't have the trades like they do down here in Louisiana. And we couldn't get welders and stuff. And these plants are down there losing millions of dollars a day. They would fly in like worldwide welding, and it's all union. And they come in, they some bitches work, but they get paid a lot of money. But they come in and they make the company money ultimately. So I don't know what the answer is. But they can't be shutting shit down. Yeah, they can't. They're telling all of America go fuck you. I get them trying to better themselves, and I get that's why the union is there. But you can't do it just to say F the world. You know, I don't know. They'll figure it out.
And when 50% pay raise over 6 years, so whatever that is, 8% a year, 8 on top of 8 on top of 8, or however the number works out, is, you know, so far ahead of where the average salary increases across industry are, and it already seems to be a pretty well compensated industry, that you would think that there's a point at which you can take advantage of someone in a negotiation because of leverage, but you know that it's not the right thing to do. And in the long term, it's going to hurt a lot of people to do it. And look, I know there are probably many, many, many situations where it's the employers taking advantage of the employee and in the same sort of leverage situation. And it's obviously awful when that happens, but this is one where the country's been through enough. Don't do this right now and have this kind of impact on the holiday season. And, you know, who knows how long this kind of thing could extend. So.
Yeah, for real, for real.
Hey y'all, you want to set your child up for success? Is your child struggling with a specific subject or need help with the subject? Is your child ahead, not getting challenged enough in class? Well, IXL Learning is an online learning program that enriches your homeschool curriculum. It offers practice in math, English, language arts, science, and social studies while adapting to each child, meeting them where they are. Plus, IXL encourages students to become curious and empowers them to choose how to learn. Look, we homeschool our son. No doubt about it. He's more of a visual learner, and we use IXL, and Cindy teaches him, and there are so many different benefits to the program. it adapts to exactly what he needs in different areas. So IXL is the perfect supplement to your homeschool curriculum. IXL offers interactive practice problems, educational games, lessons, and video tutorials for every topic you're teaching at home. It's easy to use, time-saving. Everything on IXL is organized by grade, subject, topic, and subtopic, making it simple to find activities for the exact skills you're covering. IXL offers instant feedback and explanations of new topics as kids use the program. Kids can explore any topic in any grade level. They aren't forced into a single learning path like they are on other programs. If you're homeschooling your child because they were falling behind or because they were too far ahead like our son, IXL is a great program to help them get the exact support they need. Kids love IXL's positive feedback awards and educational games. IXL is trusted by 15 million students worldwide and has proven to improve performance in over 75 scientific research studies. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Real Life Real Crime listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/today. Visit IXL.com/today to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price. And don't forget, Real Life Real Crime listeners get 20% off. Y'all, we really do use this product, and it's been a godsend. Hey, y'all. One thing I've learned in 16 years of being with my wife is that PMS and menopause are a very real deal. Thank goodness for hormone harmony. Hey, do you experience cravings or bloating? Do you feel a little bit down or off? Do you struggle to find comfort in your body? Do you experience bad sleep quality? Well, now it's easier to manage PMS and menopause with Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony supports hormonal balance and regulation. It relieves symptoms of menopause, supports cortisol, estrogen, and progesterone levels, promotes healthy weight loss and curbs carb cravings. It improves sleep quality, reduces occasional bloating and gas, and it relieves hot flashes and it relieves mood swings. Hormone Harmony is not just a supplement for women going through premenopause, menopause, or postmenopause. It's become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds, and Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. Now, here's the beauty about adaptogens. They help the body adapt to any stressors like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. So Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances can take it, but it's perfect for those horrible menopause symptoms that put a woman's life on hold, like hot flashes and night sweats, racing thoughts and low moods, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, and occasional bloating and gas, or no desire to be intimate with someone, if you know what I mean. Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar, is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. And the biggest benefit, my wife says, is feeling like herself again. And that's what women mention over and over in their reviews. And there are over 17,000 reviews for Hormone Harmony. And for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code RLRC at checkout. That's HAPPYMAMMOTH.com and use the code RLRC for 15% off today.
Well, I don't know. Hopefully they'll get it straight and really quick. Let's go to Maine.
One of your favorite spots.
Yeah, I can't even get it straight. Which one's the Granite State and which one's the whatever state? What is Maine's deal?
Lobsters.
Yeah, I need a lobster.
Well, they could have made it all easy for everybody and just called themselves the Lobster State, which is what they should call themselves. But New Hampshire is live free or die.
Right? Yeah, somebody corrected me the other day. I got it wrong on episodes and I had to look it up and they corrected it and whatever. But whatever Maine is, Let me tell you about a guy named Nicholas Carter. He's 31. He was convicted of ag assault against a 14-month-old child on Wednesday in Somerset County, Maine. Now, Carter's conviction came at the end of a 3-day trial, and immediately following the verdict, the judge ordered Carter to be taken into custody. Handcuffed, Carter then jumped the bar and ran out the rear doors of the second-story courtroom. Courtrooms are the greatest place on earth, y'all. Greatest show on earth, besides being Uniform Patrol. But a detective from the sheriff's office and the judicial marshals gave chase as Carter ran down the stairs and out onto the street. Security footage showed the scene as Carter made his attempt to escape. And Carter actually got outside before he tripped and fell in a nearby yard. And two jurors had been to the court and joined in the chase, fell on Carter, and helped to subdue him until officers arrived. Now, Carter faces additional charges of escape, and his sentence will be at a later date. So he just got another 10 years added to his sentence.
And I mean, running while cuffed.
Yeah.
Has anyone ever escaped while running while cuffed?
Well, they may get away for a minute while you're not looking, but yeah, you're going to catch them. And we had a guy down in Ascension Parish. They let him, he was cuffed. They let him, he said, I got to take a shit. And he's going in like a murder trial, whatever it was. I mean, I think he's a serial killer. But anyway, they let him go in the bathroom unattended, and he didn't come out. This son of a bitch goes out the window and jumps off the roof and breaks his leg.
Oh my God.
But I mean, you want to get away, you want to get away.
They let a serial killer go to the bathroom by himself?
Oh, yeah. They took his shit off. They took his stuff off. So I'm like, and the sheriff was like, that can't ever happen. And that sheriff's now retired. But for courthouses, and anytime you get outside the wire, such a high risk of escape.
Yeah. Well, I'm really interested to hear Woody Overton's version of how this next story could possibly happen. But yes. This guy's name is David Cassidy, not related to Partridge Family.
Right.
David Cassidy, but 55 years old, and he was serving a life sentence in a now closed state prison in Reidsville, Georgia, back in 2020, when he constructed and mailed bombs to federal courthouses in Anchorage, Alaska, and Washington, D.C. He was indicted this week on federal charges accusing him of making and mailing bombs. He made the explosives at the same time during the 4 months prior, it said. The indictment does not describe how Cassidy was able to make and send a bomb from inside a maximum security prison. It was not clear from the indictment why Cassidy targeted the James M. Fitzgerald U.S. Courthouse in downtown Anchorage, Alaska, or a federal facility in Washington, D.C. It also wasn't apparent if Cassidy has any ties to Alaska. I mean, not doing such a great job investigating this case, folks.
Right.
A spokesman for the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Southern District of Georgia said he could not provide information beyond what was disclosed in the indictment, which is what we just read to you. The Anchorage Police Department's bomb squad and FBI bomb techs responded to the courthouse in January of 2020 for a report of a suspicious package. An FBI spokesman said at the time that the package mailed from out of state contained, quote, a possible incendiary device, but not an improvised explosive device. Cassidy has been incarcerated since 93 on kidnapping and sexual assault charges in Georgia. While in custody, he was also convicted of gang participation, making false statements to the government, and terroristic threats and acts. Okay, so he's charged with terroristic threats and acts, is in prison for 30 years already, and the guy is somehow able to make bombs and mail them to...
I mean, no idea, no comment on that. I mean, the main thing in bombs is the powder, right? And the only way you can get powder, unless somebody smuggles you in straight up black gunpowder, is cutting open shotgun shells or bullets or whatever. I mean, what the fuck? So actually, evidently it was, he was in state prison in Reidsville, but you get to terroristic threats and all that. That's going to be a government charge, a federal charge. So I wonder if he wasn't. And I guess they say he's back in state prison in Buford, Georgia, but he probably had, they're waiting to do his federal time when he gets off of state charges for all his other shit. But I have no idea. No idea. I bet you some people are going to lose their job there.
Well, that's one of those where we got to find out the whole story, because how is that pot? Just how is that possible?
Yeah, well, you have 24 hours a day, 7 days a week to figure it out.
Yeah, well, even Andy Dufresne couldn't pull that one off.
Right. That's crazy, crazy.
Well, so, folks, should you or a family member get blown up by a bomb sent to your home by a convict, have no fear. We have friends that can help.
That's right, Aggo. I'd even bet that Roy, Kristen, and Kristen have had a case or two of death by convict bomb over the years. And their all-star team in that back room will put you all your pieces back together and slap a fresh coat of paint on you and have you sitting pretty by your viewing day.
Magic happens underneath that humongous American flag and broussard. Boom. Magic happens underneath that humongous American flag in Broussard, Louisiana, where Louisiana Funeral Services and LA Pet Crematory are. Their outstanding team can handle death by convict bomb or any other cause of death. Tell them what he sent you.
Oh, when it's time, you know where to go. It's lafuneralservices.com or lapetcrematory.com.
Rest easy. Wow.
Close. Close. Wow, we love those.
Roy, Kristen, Kristen, we got very close to it that time.
Yeah. But love y'all much. And you know, everybody always says rave things about them. I get messages all the time about what they do. And we've been there and we love them. All right, let me go to, you know, I bought a Corvette. I wanted a 1988. I wanted the green one with the tan interior. I bought one day. Listen to this shit. I had to go to Alexandria, somewhere around Alexandria to get it. And I mean, it was immaculate, clean. And Swim brought his 4.2 GPA daughter, who was 14 at the time, didn't have a driver's license. And it drove his Mercedes up there and paid cash for the vet. And he had the daughter drive and follow him all the way back, like a 3.5 hour trip. And right about 10 miles from Swim's house, it started going katong, katong. Oh, and the AC was cold too, right? And that was one of the things the guy said, he'd fix AC. It started blowing hot air and started katong, katong. And so I was able to make it to, or Swim was able to make it to the mechanic that he used. Probably the statute of limitations or I wouldn't have said that there. And the mechanic called me the next day and was like, bruh, I put my camera in a gas tank and it was full of rust. That dude is full of shit. And he said that AC, all they did was put some Freon in it. Well,
Freon in there.
So I called the guy back and said, hey, you come down here and get this piece of shit and bring me my money. Oh, no, I'm not doing it. It's a for sale. Then. But where he fucked up was when I got there, he'd already signed the title and we'd been talking. So he signed it with no notary present. And he told me that he was going to take it to a notary afterwards. And I said, well, you know what, motherfucker, I'm going to put you in jail. And I'm going to report you for this. And so he came and got my money back. Anyway, back to it. Let's go to Corvette story. And yes, we really need some banjos for the story. Dumb criminal. An unnamed 23-year-old man had just been released from an Arizona prison and he needed some transportation. So he struck up a conversation with the driver of a tractor trailer at a truck stop near Tucson. The victim told authorities the suspect had asked him about his expensive truckload, which included 10 Chevrolet C8 Corvettes, valued at over $1.25 million, y'all. Now, the unnamed man lured the driver into a false sense of security.
So they're getting $125,000 for a Corvette these days?
Yeah, those things are fine, man. They look like Lambos now. I'm past my middle age shit where I don't have to have one. My dad had a 58, which he ended up selling some years back. But anyway, that's what he had when he was in high school. But anyway, so the hours later, the deputy pulled over the tractor trailer carrying the 10 Corvettes. Now, the driver from Oklahoma had stolen a truck, and they questioned him, and he told the officers that he had done so, only because he had just got out of prison and he needed a means of transportation home. But there was more of the story. According to the sheriff's office, the man had assaulted the rightful driver of the vehicle shortly before being seen driving it. And the 23-year-old suspect had said, when he was climbing back into his truck, the suspect grabbed him and threw him out of the cab, taking off with his massive load. And when a deputy caught up with the vehicle, the driver did not at first respond to the emergency lights and sirens. He then began driving the truck recklessly and causing other drivers to pull off the road, and he eventually stopped and was taken into custody. He was booked in a Cochise County jail on several felony charges, including robbery, 11 counts of thefts, a means of transportation and felony theft. The stolen vehicle was safely recovered without damage and was released to the driver so he continued his delivery. That's according to Wilcox Police. Yeah, motherfucker, why don't you just take one of the Corvettes off the
trail? Exactly.
Okay? How far are you going to get in an 18-wheeler hauling 12 Corvettes?
It's every bit as dumb as the guy trying to run out of the courthouse while he's still handcuffed. Yes. I mean, the idea of a getaway vehicle is that you're going to be able to get away in the vehicle.
Right. Yeah. Well, prisons are full of dummies, and he went right back. So.
Yeah. And that guy definitely deserves some banjos. I wondered why at 23 they wouldn't release his name in any of these stories. Maybe he's related to somebody. protecting his name. I want to go off the board a little bit to a story I saw this morning, because I think Woody the hunter will have some interesting feedback on this story. But a Montana rancher, this guy is an 81-year-old Montana man, was sentenced Monday to 6 months in federal prison for illegally using tissue and testicles from large sheep hunted in Central Asia and the U.S. to create hybrid sheep for captive trophy hunting in Texas and Minnesota. The U.S. District Court Judge Brian Morris said he struggled to come up with a sentence for Arthur Jack Shubarth of Vaughn, Montana. He said he weighed Shubarth's age and his lack of a criminal record with a sentence that would deter anyone else from trying to change the genetic makeup of the creatures. Of creatures on earth, he said. He fined Shubarth $20,000 and ordered him to make a $4,000 payment to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Foundation. Shubarth will be allowed to self-report to a Bureau of Prisons medical facility. I will have to work the rest of my life to repair everything I've done, Shubarth told the judge just before sentencing. His attorney, Jason Holden, said cloning the giant Marco Polo sheep, which are hunted in Kyrgyzstan, he hunted in Kyrgyzstan in 2013, has ruined his client's life, reputation, and family. I think this has broken him, Holden, the attorney, said. In seeking a probationary sentence, he argued that Shubarth was a hardworking man who'd always cared for animals and did something that no one else could have done in cloning the giant sheep, which he named Montana Mountain King, or MMK. So they were calling these cloned sheep MMK. The animal has been confiscated by U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services and is being held in an accredited facility until it can be transferred to a zoo. The attorney for the U.S. Department of Justice asked that Shubarth be sentenced to prison, saying his illegal breeding operation was widespread, involved other states, and endangered the health of other wildlife. The crime involved forethought, was complex, and involved many illegal acts. Shubarth owns Sun River Enterprises, LLC, a 215-acre alternative livestock ranch, which buys, sells, and breeds, quote, alternative livestock, such as mountain sheep, mountain goats, and maybe you know what this is. I've never heard of it. An ungulate, primarily for private hunting preserves where people shoot captive trophy game animals for a fee. He's been in the game farm business since 1987, he pleaded guilty in March to charges that he and five other people conspired to use tissue from a Marco Polo sheep illegally brought into the U.S. to clone that animal and then use the clone and its descendants to create a larger hybrid species of sheep that would be more valuable for captive hunting operations. Marco Polo sheep are the largest in the world. They can weigh up to 300 pounds and have curled horns up to 5 feet long. So Schuvarth sold semen from the MMK along with hybrid sheep to three people in Texas, while a Minnesota resident bought 74 sheep to Schuvarth's ranch for them to be inseminated at various times during the conspiracy. Schuvarth said one direct offspring from MMK, he sold one for $10,000, and other sheep with lesser MMK genetics for smaller amounts. The total value of the animals involved was greater than $250,000, but less than $550,000. Hybrid sheep were also sold to people in Alabama, Arkansas, Kansas, Missouri, Nebraska, Ohio, Oregon. So he was selling them all over the place. And I guess the last part is in October of 19, he paid a hunting guide $400 for the testicles of a trophy-sized Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep that had been harvested in Montana and then extracted and sold that semen. So this guy's kind of been at this genetic altering of species. There's a picture of him holding these horns that are just enormous. I mean, they say 5 feet, but they are just enormous.
The thing is what most people don't realize is they charge them per inch on the horn as trophies. So they have a lot of these, we call them high fence game preserves, especially in Louisiana. Should they have ones with buffalo and elk and all kinds of shit in them? And, you know, I've been invited to hunt and stuff. I just don't do it. I could go anywhere and hunt whatever I want and hunt, basically. And I just soon go to my place. But the parish where I hunt, that traditionally doesn't have the wide, big, wide horns or whatever. But everything, I only have four deer that I've mounted in my entire life. And every one of them is a monster for my area, but it was fair pursuit and fair chase. This dude is, look, I've seen these places, and I got friends that go and hunt them. They come back with these massive giant racks, and I'm like, wow, that's 10 grand to show up. Okay. And everything, when you kill, and they'll give you like, they got fucking African animals like gazelles and shit. Maybe not gazelles, but the one with the twisty horns and all this different shit, you can go shoot them. What's the fucking point? They basically are like ringing a dinner bell, and they're coming out and you shoot them, and then they charge you per inch on the horn, and then they charge you to mount them, and all that stuff. And it's a big racket. It used to be even bigger before they outlawed. I don't know if you know about this. They had these high fence places where they would get animals to come in, and people could get on their computer, and the gun would be in the stand, and you could see through the fucking rifle scope on your computer. You pick out which animal you want to kill, and you hit the button on the computer, and they pull the trigger and shoot the animal. Yeah.
How is there any kind of sport?
They outlawed that shit. Yeah. Still gonna have outlaws, and this guy, he fucking knew what he was doing.
But a traditionalist like you, this is something you look down upon. I mean, this is not.
No, I'm not looking down on all people that do these high fence ranches and stuff. They make their livings. Look, they take care of their animals, but they split in hairs, man. I'm talking about like freak monster big deer that you're never gonna see in the wild. They have like geneticists and shit that figure it out, and these things are just unbelievable. But I don't get any enjoyment out of going shooting something that you know is going to show up, and you got to pay for per inch and all that.
Hunting, right?
Yeah, it really is. It's for the people who fly in and the private jets and the and land and get out and go drink some beer and shoot a $30,000 deer.
Crazy stuff. Well, so where's the big bet this weekend? What are you liking?
Let's start with tonight. It's so tough. Falcons and Tampa Bay. It's 1.5. Tampa Bay is plus 1.5. Falcons got me last week. I took whoever it was they were playing. I don't know. LSU's not playing. I don't know.
I like Baker. I can never. Well. The Falcons are such a who cares kind of team to me that always just put a little bit on the player that I like, and I love that guy's just his grit. I mean, he's just a gutsy, you know, little guy hanging in there, taking the shots. I like the way he competes. But speaking of competing, how about my boy Arch last week?
Man, he's a stud, right? And I was telling somebody that before that game began, and I didn't get to watch that one because I was doing something, but I bet on it. That's the first time that Texas hadn't covered for me this year on the spread. But I have never seen somebody throw a ball as hard as that kid throws a ball. He's got to take some of the heat off that ball. I'm not talking about he's throwing heat-seeking missiles to his players. You know what I mean? But he's awesome. But
a couple of those long balls he hit in stride.
Yeah, but I'm talking about some of those short ones in the middle. He's throwing like the bounce off his hand. Yeah, he's a stud. You know, he went from number 75 to number 7 in the Heisman.
He's not even a starter. No, what the Giants need to do is work with Eli and figure out some way to coordinate this thing to where, you know, he's going to pull an Eli. Because you remember, Eli was drafted by the Chargers and refused to go. And then the Giants and the Chargers worked out a trade to bring. So we desperately will need a quarterback. Let's go the next 3 years of sucking, and we'll take linemen and some defensive players and just lay in wait for.
Let me tell you something. I was looking at it this morning and trying to pick a cheap defense, right? And I was doing it by the numbers. And do you know that the Giants had more sacks and more than interceptions and everything than any of the hold on, tell you real quick. Than any of the other teams that I look at. I actually took them. Here it is right here. New York Giants. I could erase them. Hold on. I'll tell you. They have one interception. DFR, I don't even know what that means. They got three. They got 15 sacks, Steve. That's 45 points. And so anyway, I took them.
Defense held Washington without a touchdown and managed to lose the game. I mean, they have kept the team in every game, and Jones has just blown it. I mean, Neighbors is a star. He's running all over the field wide open. And the guy just can't get him the ball downfield. It's freaking crazy. But anyway, I don't know. Throw a little money on the Bucks, I guess. But, enjoy it, buddy. Have a good weekend. And folks, thank you for listening, all that good podcaster stuff. Prayers go out to those folks in North Carolina and the other areas that are fighting to recover from the hurricane. And
definitely. Love y'all. All right.
Peace. Aglets.
Your Honor, I'd like to present to the ladies and gentlemen of the jury with Exhibit B, a bag of Sweet Tango apples.
Boy, these apples are delicious.
And zesty. And sweet.
Best I ever tasted.
Your Honor, I object.
Overruled. Court dismissed. We need to recess to the grocery store for some Sweet Tango apples.
You love a great mystery, but not in the produce aisle. Be sure to reach for Sweet Tango, the most delicious tasting apple money can buy. Investigate where you can get yours at sweettango.com.